Okay, so ever find yourself just scrolling on your phone, hours kind of slipping away?
Okay.
Your brain feels buzzy, full of information, but maybe your heart feels a bit empty.
Definitely relatable.
You know, you have these big dreams, important projects, maybe a vision for who you want to be,
Sure.
but then you sit down to actually focus and your mind just rebels.
Totally.
You open a book or your laptop, you're ready to go, and like 30 seconds later,
Down the rabbit hole.
exactly, lost in reels or whatever. Sound familiar?
I think it sounds familiar to pretty much everyone listening.
Right. But here's the thing. It's not laziness. You're not broken. It's just, well, human. Especially with how the world is designed now, right? Fragmenting our attention.
Absolutely.
But here's the secret, or maybe not so secret. Champions, the people achieving amazing things, they don't just have focus. They actively train their minds for it.
They rewire their brains. That's the key
Yeah.
for sustained, powerful performance.
Exactly. Welcome everyone to the deep dive.
Great to be here.
Our mission today is, well, to cut through all that noise. We want to give you a kind of shortcut to being really well informed about something incredible.
Which is?
How to unlock that laser-like focus, get into peak performance states, and maybe even harness your mind to manifest your deepest desires.
It sounds ambitious, but it's definitely achievable. And for this deep dive, we've pulled together a really fascinating stack of sources.
Yeah. What are we looking at?
We're drawing from cutting-edge modern neuroscience research, which is super interesting.
Okay.
Also, ancient spiritual texts like the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, interesting connection.
Yeah, and insights from leading peak performance experts, plus the latest studies on cognitive enhancement.
So a real mix.
Definitely. We'll unpack the science, explore that profound spiritual wisdom, and reveal how your subconscious mind plays this crucial, often hidden role in everything.
Okay, so think of this as your personalized guide. We want you to understand what it really means to be in the zone.
That feeling.
Yeah, how it impacts your brain, and maybe most importantly, how you can access it consistently.
Right. To transform your work, your studies, your training.
Your whole life, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's dive in.
Let's do it.
So let's start with that phrase we hear all the time, being in the zone. What does it actually mean?
Yeah, it gets thrown around a lot. Our sources consistently define it as flow state.
Flow state, right.
It's that mental space where you're just completely absorbed, effortlessly focused, deeply immersed in whatever you're doing.
Like maybe a dancer lost in the movement.
Exactly. Or a scientist analyzing data late into the night, totally unaware of time passing.
Yeah, time seems to warp, distractions just vanish, and whatever you're doing feels, well, effortless, almost
Yeah.
automatic.
And what's really fascinating, like we touched on, is that flow isn't just some nice feeling or a metaphor.
It's neurological.
It's a very real, measurable neurological phenomenon.
Yeah.
Brain imaging studies actually show that during flow, your brain downregulates the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex.
Okay, that's the part that handles.
That's often responsible for self-judgment, overthinking, that nagging inner critic voice.
Okay, so it quiets that down.
Right. This allows for something called transient hypofrontality. Basically, it quiets that self-referential chatter and lets you get totally absorbed.
So it's like your brain hits the mute button on the critic.
Kind of, or like turning off the brakes so you can go full speed.
Yeah.
And at the same time, your brain boosts gamma brainwaves.
Gamma waves, those are the fast ones.
Yeah, fast frequency waves that synchronize multiple brain regions. It's like upgrading your mental bandwidth for rapid insight and creativity.
Wow. So it's not just shutting things off, it's actively enhancing other abilities by getting different brain parts working together.
Exactly.
Does that mean we're literally like smarter or more perceptive in that state?
In a way, yes. You become more efficient, more intuitive, and the payoff is, well, staggering.
How staggering.
Some research suggests flow states can boost productivity by as much as 500%.
500%.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Seriously. And this isn't just for, elite athletes or genius scientists. Flow is universal. It's a human capacity we're all built for.
So, humanity's greatest hits, basically.
You could say that. Coding complex, AI, groundbreaking scientific discoveries, a lot of that likely happened in this heightened state.
It makes you wonder what's going on chemically inside us when we hit that sweet spot.
Right. It's like your brain's own internal pharmacy kicks into high gear.
Okay.
Key feel-good and focus-enhancing chemicals, think dopamine, norepinephrine, and endorphins, they flood your system.
Creating that perfect cocktail.
Exactly. For optimal consciousness and this powerful, almost chemical reward for being fully engaged, it's a state we instinctively crave.
But, and this is the big but,
Yeah, the challenge is, for most people, actually accessing it feels elusive, hard to get into on demand.
That's a key point. Why is it so elusive for most of us, especially when it sounds so beneficial? Is it just a modern problem, like phones and notifications, or is it older than that?
It's definitely not just a modern issue, though modern life doesn't help. Which brings us to some really ancient wisdom.
Like the Bhagavad Gita you mentioned?
Exactly. When we think of the Gita, we often think about war, duty, devotion.
Sure.
But what often gets missed is how much it speaks directly to cultivating focus. The whole conversation between Krishna and Arjuna happens right in the middle of a battlefield.
Ultimate chaos.
The ultimate chaos.
Yeah.
But the real battle, Krishna teaches, is inside Arjuna's mind.
Oh, that storm of doubt, overthinking, emotional conflict. Sounds familiar.
Very familiar, right? Even thousands of years ago, Krishna tells Arjuna, and by extension us,
yeah,
from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self.
Wow. That's not for a monk in a quiet cave. That's for someone in the thick of it.
Precisely. It's for a warrior in absolute chaos, much like us trying to navigate our daily lives with constant messages, social media, endless demands on our attention. The mind is described as restless, turbulent, obstinate, very strong. Even Arjuna felt overwhelmed by it.
So what's the solution, according to Krishna?
He affirmed it is possible to control it through two things. Avyasa,
which means
consistent, dedicated practice. And viragya.
Detachment.
Detachment, yeah. Specifically, detachment from the immediate results or outcomes.
Okay, so translating that, consistent practice today could mean deliberately just coming back to your task again and again, even if it's just 2 minutes of focused work or meditation daily.
Exactly. Building that muscle.
And detachment. It isn't about not caring about your goals, right? It's more about not getting emotionally wrapped up in the day-to-day ups and downs.
Precisely. If you're building a startup, say, and the results aren't there yet, the focus isn't obsessing over the analytics dashboard every 5 minutes.
It's on showing up, doing the work consistently.
Yes. Krishna even redefines yoga itself. Not just poses, but performing your duty with equanimity, abandoning attachment to success or failure.
Being balanced. Not chasing, not escaping, just showing up fully present.
That's the essence. And the Gita suggests some practical hacks that feel remarkably modern for cultivating this.
Like what?
Like waking up and spending the first 15 minutes without your phone.
Ooh, tough one for many.
Definitely. Journal, meditate, or just sit with your breath. Also, don't glorify multitasking. Our brains aren't really built for it.
We think we're good at it, but we're mostly not.
Exactly. Instead, take multiple intentional breaks. Pause, breathe, reset. It's like lifting weights for your focus muscle.
One rep at a time, one breath, one moment of presence.
This is what Krishna calls yoga. That union with your task through focused attention.
This idea of detachment from results from the Gita, it leads to another profound insight you see in a lot of ancient wisdom, doesn't it?
Which is?
The idea that the mind isn't you. You're the awareness observing your thoughts.
Yes, a fundamental principle. And that very principle opens the door to ancient meditative practices designed to train that observer state.
And helps you get into those deep, flow-like states.
Exactly. It also touches on pathways like Jengama Dhyana, an ancient technique.
How does that work?
You deliberately concentrate your mind and sight on a single point, like the space between your eyebrows, the third eye, as it's often called.
Like a laser focus exercise for your attention.
Pretty much. Deliberately training your ability to cultivate uninterrupted awareness.
Are there parallels in other traditions?
Oh, absolutely. Shikantaza, which is Zen's just sitting meditation, mirrors flow's effortless awareness. You let thoughts arise and dissolve without resistance.
Leading to a kind of spacious clarity.
Exactly. And Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry, or Atmavichar, aims to dissolve that ego identification, silence the internal chatter.
Opening space for innate clarity and that present moment flow.
Right. And these practices, they aren't just seen as spiritual. They're believed to profoundly heighten intuition, clarity, mental focus. They directly bridge the spiritual and the cognitive.
Okay, so we've looked at the neuroscience of flow, the brain changes.
Right.
And the ancient wisdom that, wow, really mirrors it in many ways.
It's quite striking.
So how do we take all these powerful insights and actually turn them into a practical roadmap? Something you can use day to day?
Great question. Modern peak performance experts, like Stephen Kotler, for instance, have distilled a lot of this into essentially 4 actionable pillars of flow that anyone can train.
four pillars. Okay, what are they?
They are identifying flow blockers, cultivating what's called flow proneness, activating specific flow triggers, and understanding the flow cycle itself.
All right, let's break those down. Flow blockers first. What's the biggest one?
No surprise here, really. In the 21st century, especially in the workplace, but also just daily life, our phones.
Yep, knew it.
Research shows something staggering, like 80% of people check their phone within 15 minutes of waking up.
Wow.
This device, as amazing as it is just packed with flow blockers. Constant distraction, the uncertainty from notifications, it cultivates an attention deficit trait almost.
So what's the antidote? Just throw the phone away.
Uh-huh. Maybe not realistic for most, but a simple, profoundly powerful tool is the concept of flow before phone.
Flow before phone, I like it. What does it mean in practice?
The golden rule here is committing to getting, say, 2 to 3 hours of productive flow on your highest priority task in the morning before you turn on or even touch your device.
That sounds challenging, but powerful.
It is easier said than done, absolutely. But the idea is that the deeper states of flow you access become far more compelling, more rewarding than the kind of instant digital gratification addiction.
Okay, pillar one. Block the blockers, especially the phone early on. What's next?
Next up is flow proneness. This is basically your natural tendency to access flow.
And when is that highest?
It's generally highest first thing in the morning. Because your brain waves are still closer to sleep's alpha theta waves,
yeah.
It creates this fertile ground for deep focus.
So leverage that morning window.
Exactly. The suggestion is try to wake up and get to work on your most important task within like 90 seconds of opening your eyes.
90 seconds. Wow. Okay, that sounds intense.
It is a challenge, no doubt.
Yeah.
But it's about drastically amplifying productivity early, which allows you to relax more later in the day.
I have to admit, that 90-second rule sounds like real discipline. Have you actually tried that or seen clients try it? How does that play out?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those practices that really forces you to confront your default morning impulses, you know, reaching for the phone, hitting snooze.
Yeah.
I've seen clients struggle initially, for sure.
Right.
But once they experience that surge of focused accomplishment, before the day's chaos even truly begins, it becomes incredibly addictive, in a good way.
It shifts the whole dynamic.
Completely. It reshapes their morning routine from being reactive, responding to emails, notifications, to being proactively productive on what matters most.
Okay, makes sense. So blockers, proneness. What was the third pillar?
Flow triggers.
Yeah.
These are specific preconditions that instantly help usher us into flow.
Like flipping a switch.
Kinda. The more triggers you have present, the faster, deeper, and longer you'll likely stay in flow. Mihalis, except Mihaly.
The godfather of flow, right?
That's him. He identified three primary triggers. Clear goals, immediate feedback, and the crucial challenge skills balance.
Okay. Clear goals, immediate feedback, challenge skills balance. Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about surfing.
Yeah.
Spotting the next wave you want to catch, that's a clear goal.
Right.
Feeling your balance adjust on the board as you ride it, that's immediate feedback.
Okay.
And matching your skill level to the wave's difficulty, maybe moving from a small wave to a slightly bigger one as you improve, that's the challenge skills balance.
You need that sweet spot, right? Not too easy, not too hard.
Exactly. The sweet spot, that perfect edge, seems to be tasks that are about 4% more difficult than your current skill level.
Just 4%? That specific.
That's what the research suggests. It pushes you just beyond boredom, but keeps you safely away from anxiety, right into the zone.
Interesting. Are there other triggers besides those main three?
Definitely. Dopamine is a key player here, as we mentioned.
Your reward chemical.
And focus chemical. Flow triggers that boost dopamine include things like novelty, something new and interesting.
Keeps things fresh.
Yeah. Unpredictability, complexity, and even the profound experience of awe.
Like seeing a sunset.
Or tackling a really complex problem. That little rush you get when you finally solve a challenging crossword puzzle. That's dopamine.
And it helps you focus more.
It actually amplifies your ability to recognize patterns and make connections. Risk-taking, too, whether it's physical, emotional, intellectual, produces a surge of dopamine.
Not just as a reward, but to drive motivation.
Exactly. To drive motivation and exploration.
Okay, and speaking of motivation, aren't there specific types that help with flow?
Yes. There are five key intrinsic motivators, and they're kind of designed to work in sequence.
Intrinsic, meaning coming from within, right?
Right. Not external rewards, they are.
Mm.
Curiosity, passion, purpose, autonomy, and mastery.
Okay, walk us through that sequence.
Curiosity basically gives you focus for free. You don't struggle to pay attention to something you're genuinely curious about.
Yeah.
Passion builds on curiosity, providing tremendous sustained focus. Then, purpose, while often seen as altruistic, is powerful from a peak performance view because it naturally demands autonomy.
The freedom to pursue that purpose your way.
Exactly. And that autonomy then drives mastery, the dedication to develop the skills needed to pursue that purpose well.
That link between intrinsic motivation and deep focus feels really profound.
It is, because these drivers, curiosity, passion, purpose, they're not just about getting more done. They're about aligning your entire being with what you truly desire to create or achieve.
Which kind of brings us to that concept you mentioned earlier, manifestation.
Exactly. It's a natural bridge. Because manifestation, viewed through this lens, isn't necessarily magic. It can be seen as a powerful extension of sustained, aligned focus.
Where your internal state starts influencing your external reality.
You could put it that way.
Yeah.
Your energy of consciousness continuously focusing on a thought, allowing it to condense, in a sense, into reality. Sustained, consistent focus channels your clear intention deep into your subconscious mind.
We'll definitely circle back to the subconscious role. So we've covered blockers, proneness, triggers. What was the last pillar?
The final pillar is understanding the flow cycle. This acknowledges that flow isn't usually an instant on-off switch.
More like a process.
Yeah, more like a dimmer switch with distinct phases. It typically begins with struggle.
Struggle, that sounds counterintuitive.
It's the loading phase.
Uh-oh.
Where discomfort or challenge might make you want to avoid the task altogether.
Ah, okay, procrastination zone.
Exactly. And most people, unfortunately, in their careers, studies, whatever, they spend their time stuck in the first few minutes of this struggle phase. They never persist long enough to break through.
So the key is pushing through that initial discomfort.
Yes. The key here is task persistence, and you can actively train that.
Wow.
Things like attention span stretching, like committing to reading a book all the way through, even if parts feel slow or uncomfortable at first, build that persistence muscle.
Okay, so you push through the struggle. Then what?
Then comes release. Your brain actually responds to your persistence by increasing dopamine.
Ah, the reward kicks in.
Right. Enhancing focus and motivation, effectively pulling you out of struggle and into the next phase.
Which is?
Which is, of course, flow itself. Where, as we discussed, your prefrontal cortex temporarily deactivates, allowing for that efficient, instinctive, rapid decision making.
The zone.
The zone. And finally, and this is absolutely vital, recovery.
Recovery. Why is that so important?
Here, you replenish your neurochemistry,
yeah.
You recuperate energy, and importantly, you integrate the knowledge or skills you acquired during that deep flow session.
So skipping recovery is a bad idea.
It's how you burn out your system. You can't just stay in high-intensity flow forever. Recovery is part of the cycle.
Makes sense. Now, let's connect this to the brain's like management system, the prefrontal cortex you mentioned earlier.
Right, the CEO of the brain.
Or the conductor of the orchestra, I've heard it called.
Yeah, both good analogies. It's crucial for planning, organizing, decision-making, all that goal-directed behavior.
It's the part that lets us turn thoughts into actions, right? Not just run on autopilot.
Exactly. It stops us from being ruled by automatic, often unproductive behaviors. It's the highest level of the cortex, takes the longest to fully develop, often into our mid-20s.
And this CEO can get sluggish.
It definitely can. It's not just major brain injuries we're talking about. Even common things like chronic sleep deprivation.
Guilty.
Prolonged stress. Or that constant digital distraction we keep coming back to. All that can cause that mental fog feeling.
Yeah, that feeling when you just can't seem to prioritize, you're easily distracted, things aren't getting done efficiently.
That's often your prefrontal cortex struggling to do its job effectively. But the good news is, just like the brain can recover from more severe issues, we can actively train and optimize our frontal lobes every single day.
So even a small dip in frontal lobe function, like maybe just 1%, could have a real impact on focus and getting things done.
Absolutely. It's often those subtle executive function issues that make it harder to plan, initiate, and complete tasks.
And working memory is key here too, right? Holding information in your mind.
Fundamental. Working memory, your ability to hold info in mind and manipulate it, underpins almost all cognition. And the prefrontal cortex is vital for it.
And dopamine plays a role there too.
A huge role. Dopamine, as a neuromodulator, helps keep that persistent neural activity needed for working memory online in the frontal lobes. We know low dopamine levels impair working memory.
So boosting dopamine helps.
It can, yes. Increasing dopamine can improve it. However, It's an inverted U function.
Meaning?
Meaning too little is bad, but too much dopamine can actually make things worse. Performance declines again.
Like turning up a sound system too loud just creates distortion?
Exactly. More isn't always better. The goal is finding that optimal level, which is pretty individual.
And we can't just, like, do a blood test for brain dopamine easily, right?
No, unfortunately not that simple.
Huh.
But a proxy, sometimes, is your working memory capacity itself, like how many numbers you can hold in your mind and recall.
Which is why things like certain medications or specific brain training exercises are being studied for cognitive enhancement.
Right. But the broader goal should always be to optimize the system, not just artificially crank up one chemical. It usually involves a mix of approaches because these brain systems are so interconnected.
This raises kind of use it or lose it question for the frontal lobe, doesn't it?
You dug
it. If we're not consistently challenging those circuits, maybe by constantly scrolling social media, which is rapid, shallow engagement, not deep focus.
You're jumping between contexts constantly.
Do those frontal lobe functions actually regress? Does the modern world actively work against them?
It's a valid concern, absolutely. While not every brain system declines significantly with age, the frontal executive system is particularly susceptible.
And technology habits could accelerate that.
The way we engage with technology.
Yeah.
Constantly switching tasks, fragmented attention. Yes, it can potentially accelerate that natural decline. However, and this is incredibly good news, we can actively fight back. We can optimize brain health and strengthen these circuits throughout life. Deliberately reading books deeply.
Not just skimming headlines.
Right. Learning complex new skills, engaging in strategic games like chess. These activities train and reinforce those crucial neural pathways.
Okay, so active engagement is key. And are there specific, maybe simpler practices we can do daily?
Yes, and here's where it gets remarkably practical. There's compelling research on a simple 17-minute daily practice.
17 minutes? That sounds doable. What is it?
It's called interoception practice. Basically, you sit quietly, eyes closed, and intentionally focus on subtle internal bodily sensations.
Like what kind of sensations?
It's like the rise and fall of your breath, maybe the sensation of your clothes on your skin, or the feeling of your body making contact with a chair or floor. Just noticing.
And just doing that for 17 minutes helps focus.
Remarkably, yes. Studies have shown that just one 17-minute session can significantly reduce what are called attentional blinks.
Attentional blinks.
Those moments where your intense focus on one thing makes you momentarily miss other important details that appear soon after.
Ah, okay. So this practice makes you less likely to miss things.
Exactly. And this simple, consistent practice doesn't just improve focus in the short term. It appears to create near-permanent improvements and might even help offset some age-related cognitive decline.
Wow. Just by paying attention to your internal state.
It's a powerful, accessible form of what's often called open monitoring meditation. And it directly strengthens your attentional control network.
That's fascinating. Are there other quick tools?
Another powerful one you can use instantly is panoramic vision or open gaze.
Panoramic vision, like widening your view.
Exactly. You consciously dilate your visual field. So even while looking straight ahead, you allow yourself to become aware of your periphery, the ceiling, the floor, the walls to the side.
How does that help?
It seems to engage a distinct neural circuit that's better at processing information in time. It has a higher frame rate, so to speak, and works effectively from the very first time you try it.
Just consciously widening your gaze, like expanding your awareness outwards.
Precisely. Beyond just the narrow focus point right in front of you, it seems to calm the nervous system, too.
Okay, amazing. So, interoception, panoramic vision. Now, let's tie this all back to that idea of manifestation you brought up.
Right, because when you cultivate this kind of laser-like focus and really understand how your brain works, the law of attraction, for example, can be viewed differently.
Not as mystical, wishful thinking.
Perhaps less mystical and more about, well, the energy of consciousness. Continuously focusing on a thought, allowing it to gain momentum, to condense into reality through sustained attention and belief.
So consistent focus channels your intention deep into the subconscious.
That's the idea. Practices like manifestation meditation, which often merge visualization, clear intention, and mindfulness, help clarify your goals and profoundly enhance that internal motivation and belief.
But it works alongside action, right? Not instead of it.
Absolutely crucial point, yes.
Yeah.
Consistent action is key. And your subconscious mind plays a vital role here.
That's it.
Limiting beliefs. Those often hidden assumptions or blocks you hold about yourself or what's possible. They can subtly undermine any conscious effort you make towards a goal, including manifestation.
So you might be trying to focus on abundance, but subconsciously believe you don't deserve it.
Exactly. Once those deeply held, often unconscious beliefs are identified and maybe dissolved or reprogrammed, your conscious focus and intention become far more potent. It clears the pathway for real, tangible outcomes.
So it's like aligning all the different parts of yourself.
Precisely. When you integrate the neuroscience of focus and flow with the stillness and wisdom from ancient spiritual practices, and then add that powerful subconscious realignment through intentional thought,
yeah,
you create more than just focus.
You create.
You cultivate a truly personalized operating system to manifest what you want most in your life. It involves maybe neurocognitive engineering, like using binaural beats to stimulate gamma waves.
Okay.
Practicing spiritual anchors, like those third eye meditations for profound concentration. And subconscious alignment through powerful visualization and actively reprogramming limiting beliefs.
It really sounds like it all comes down to consistency, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Blending that spiritual calm, cognitive efficiency, and intentional action to produce meaningful, lasting results.
Wow. Okay. Oh, we have covered a remarkable journey today, haven't we?
We really have. A lot of ground.
From defining that elusive flow state, getting into the intricate science of how your brain operates in the zone.
Yeah, the neuroscience is fascinating.
To exploring profound ancient wisdom, like from the Bhagavad Gita, for cultivating focus.
Amazing how relevant it still feels.
Right. Understanding the vital role of the prefrontal cortex, dopamine, and ultimately how all this connects potentially to the power of manifestation.
And we dove into those practical pillars of flow.
Yeah, the blockers, proneness, triggers, the cycle.
Practical hacks from the Gita. The surprising power of that interoception practice and panoramic vision.
And how to intentionally align these different systems, neurocognitive, spiritual, subconscious, for peak performance.
I think this deep dive really reveals that peak performance isn't just reserved for, you know, the elite athletes or the brilliant scientists.
No, it feels much more universal.
It's a universal human capacity, really, just waiting to be unlocked by anyone.
And what's truly fascinating, I think, is that achieving this heightened state, this focus and capability, it isn't magic.
No, it's alignment. It's a deliberate, trainable act of alignment.
We've seen how intentional practice can literally rewire your brain circuits.
Yeah, neuroplasticity in action.
How these ancient traditions hold surprisingly modern, even data-backed wisdom.
The parallels are undeniable.
And how even a simple, consistent practice, like that 17-minute daily interoception, can significantly reduce those attentional blinks and boost your focus.
Small hinges swing big doors.
Exactly. So here's a thought to leave you with. If you were to commit to just one small, consistent action daily.
Just one.
Maybe it's that 17-minute interoception practice. Or maybe it's dedicating those first 2 hours of your morning to flow before phone.
A challenging but potentially transformative one?
How might the cumulative effect of just that one consistent action truly redefine your personal operating system? Your capacity for creativity, for productivity, for manifesting your deepest goals, not just today, but in the months and years to come.